Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. 2 weeks ago, we posted our interview with Sam Williams of the Flying Karamazov Brothers. Rita and I had such a wonderful time hanging out with Sam, and we chatted for so long, I promised you that I'd share more of our conversation with Sam in a future podcast episode. So, as many of you who follow me on Facebook or Twitter already know, we were devastated to find out yesterday morning that our friend Sam Williams of the Flying Karamazov Brothers died of a heart attack Friday night in his hometown of Seattle, Washington. Sam was working as a city bus driver and had the attack while he was driving, but he was able to slow down, pull over, and tell the passengers what was happening before he collapsed. He was pronounced dead at the hospital. He was a comedian, juggler, bus driver, and now, apparently, hero. Sam and I have been going back and forth last week about how the first podcast sounded and how much he was looking forward to hearing the rest of it and how much we were both looking forward to seeing each other again. Looks like that last thing isn't going to happen for a while now, but at least I can play you more of our conversation. I was going to call this episode something like Opening for the Dead, for reasons which will become clear, but that seems wildly inappropriate now. So I'll just call it Remembering Sam Williams. Yeah, all right, you were in a movie with Danny DeVito and Michael Douglas, but, all right, fair.
Like anybody.
Like who hasn't? But you guys, the Flying Karamazovs, also opened for the Grateful Dead. What was that like?
It was trippy, man. any number of times. It happened before I was in the group. The guys actually opened for them when they closed down Winterland in San Francisco. And the Blues Brothers were the main opening act.
Wow. How does an audience respond that they've come to see a bunch of musical acts and then the jugglers come out?
It is the Grateful Dead crowd, and they've been prepping for the shows. So.
The audience is doing their warm-up, so they're ready to go.
Yes, they are. Sometimes they were indeed pretty trippy, but sometimes they were a magnificent audience. One time it was horrible. Let's see. When I first joined the Karamazovs in opening for the Grateful Dead was at the end of 1981, beginning of 82, at the Oakland Auditorium. There's a snippet of a chunk of that performance on YouTube these days. We were performing on the platform out in the middle of the audience in this auditorium. The auditorium, of course, was jam-packed. The audience completely covered the floor and then on up to the furthest reaches of the stands. Sometimes when there were better audience, you do a joke when it's like 6,000, 10,000 people or whatever, it takes time for the sound to get out there. It's a wave of the joke going out and the wave coming back in of the laughter or whatever. So that takes a little getting used to.
Particularly with an audience that's so stoned, they're already getting it 3 seconds late.
it was like a 10-second lag for the response. No. That particular show, we were doing this routine called Whoosh, where we all run in from various places to go on stage and begin juggling. To begin our routine, that part's not on the tape online. I was going to jump down from the stage and run through the crowd. Mickey Hart and Billy Graham were going to come out and talk and introduce us, and I asked them, so what's my cue when I come out? Well, when we say the Flying Karamazov Brothers. And so they start talking a little bit, and they say we're going to have for an opening act the Flying Karamazov Brothers, and I start running out for the whoosh sound, and they were still talking. But I didn't know. It seemed like it would be a total letdown if I stopped, so I just ran right through them, between the two of them, and jumped out, and it was was a sea of human beings standing there without an inch between them, and I was screaming, "Move!" And my feet brushed the back of somebody's head on the way down. If you're listening, I am so, so sorry. And I ran on through the crowd, and Howard and Paul ran from their corners, and we got on stage and did the routine and got out of there, and then hung around and listened to the Grateful Dead all night. And it was a party. And then we trashed Jerry's car. You want to hear that story?
Yes, please.
I had two questions. What was Jerry like, and what was Bill Graham like?
I had very little interaction with Bill Graham. He was a decent, regular human being for what little I saw of him. I'll get to Jerry in a moment.
Okay.
So we finished up the night. We had to wait, actually, till the show was over to be able to get our props out of there, I think. But I was happy. A Grateful Dead show is always a giant party anyway. I love to hang out. We finished up. We loaded up our bus, Mr. Big, an old school bus.
Great name for a bus, Mr. Yeah. Big.
Well, originally, the Karamazovs, before I was in the group, had, I think it was a bread van. They named it Boris. And then they replaced it with another van of a similar sort and named it Natasha.
Of course.
And then came a bigger van that was named Fearless Leader. Finally, they got a bus named Mr. Big. And so that was the vehicle when I joined. And on the back of it, we had a friend solder on a back porch, this steel rebar kind of thing with a metal plate. It was maybe 3 feet deep, and just really solid metal construction. And the bus was parked at the curb beside the Oakland Auditorium. And Paul got in the driver's seat, and I got out on the back porch with the door open, you know, the school buses with the door in the back. I was directing him. And he pulled out, backing up out into the lane next to the parked vehicles so that we were right next to this BMW. There was a vehicle right in front of us in the same lane, you know, just in front of where we had been, and so it was going to be a bit of a turn to get around that, and Paul started to go forward. I said, "No, wait," and he said, "No, I got it," and he went ahead and turned forward, and the porch that I was on, this very solid metal porch, a can opener, scraped the front left fender of this BMW parked there and kind of removed lights and tore up metal and stuff.
And Bill Graham came out and said, "What have you done to my car?"
One of the roadies for the Dead jumped out of a nearby semi and said, "You guys stay right here. That's Jerry's car." And the guys were already acquainted with Mr. Garcia from opening for him before. So Paul and I, the only two remaining Karamazovs there at the event that night, that morning, it was around dawn, I guess, we went back in, and we found Jerry's dressing room, and he was sitting there all tuckered out talking with another musician of my acquaintance whose name escapes me. I took off my hat, my traditional Karamazov stupid hat, a four-cornered gray, more or less, and held it in my hands. Maybe Paul did the same, and we said, "Mr. Garcia?" We kind of scraped up your car, and he just kind of takes a sigh and goes, "You assholes." And you know, we offered to pay for it, fine, I'll get it taken. I just got it back to cherry condition. This guy, what do you call a guy that parks your car at a restaurant?
A valet
drove his car at some restaurant and just rammed it into a brick wall and trashed it, and they wouldn't pay for anything, and he just had it fixed back up, and so we tear it up for him again.
Oh, no.
And And after singing all night, Jerry Garcia sounded a lot like Jesse White, the Maytag repairman.
Yeah, we were just talking about him.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. wonderful character actor of old. Maybe seen in Harvey for you fans of old movies.
And the former Maytag repairman from the old commercials, if you remember. We were literally talking about him this morning.
Yeah.
The loneliest man in town. Jerry sounded like the loneliest man in town right then with his Beamer wrecked up by us. And so eventually we waited for the bill to come. Not Bill Graham. the bill for the car. And it never came. We got back in touch and a dead fan had fixed it for free and we were off the hook. It worked out very nicely for us.
Hi, everybody. I'm Stan Lai, the artistic director of the Uzun Theater Festival in China, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Today, I fly off to China for 3 weeks with Dan Sasky and Reed Martin to perform the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, Revised, in Beijing, Shanghai, Nanjing, and Xiamen. And a week from today, Michael Faulkner, Mick Orff, and Dustin Sullivan will perform the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in North Carolina, Massachusetts, Colorado, and Maryland. Then in the first half of 2017, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged in the U.S. and the U.K. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for The Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
Now, speaking of going on tour in the bus, you guys did a thing called Chautauqua, Old Time Chautauqua. Tell us a little bit about that.
We actually call that the New Old Time Chautauqua.
Okay. The New Old Time, okay.
Which seems a bit wordy to me, but I wasn't there for the decision. My very first year, 1981, as a Karamazov, we started talking about doing a Chautauqua. Paul had been thinking about this for a while. For those who don't know, a Chautauqua is historically mostly a traveling event that in the 1870s through like the 1920s or so, until movies came along, basically, it was the major form of entertainment in America. There were literally hundreds of traveling Chautauquas, and they would have entertainment. It started out actually on Lake Chautauqua in New York. As a get-together for teaching Sunday school teachers. And so it would continue to have a religious element, a teaching element. It would have a major orator of the day, former presidents, Mark Twain, whoever would go on Chautauquas and speak to the crowds. And there was nothing else going on in all the zillion small towns of America, so everybody came from miles around to see any Chautauqua anytime it was there. And Paul had long been aware of this old thing and wanted to recreate it. And as it happened, the aforementioned Patch Adams, Paul was talking to him about this idea, and Patch had had a similar thought, wanting to recreate Chautauquas.
Now, you say Patch Adams. This is the doctor that Robin Williams played, right?
Yes. In the movie of the same name.
Yes.
However, Patch Adams is like 6'5" or something, a real beanpole, historically has a pointy mustache that sticks out of few inches beyond his face on either side. It looks a little bit different than Robin, but Robin, being the sweetheart that he was a perfectly nice choice to play Patch Adams. And Patch is still out there going around trying to help heal people and trying to build a free hospital, which is what he was working on even back then. The Gesundheit Institute was his group that was working on that. And so the Gesundheit Institute and the Flying Karamazov brothers and a bunch of our vaudevillian friends, we all got together. I think Gesundheit put in some money, the Karamazovs put in some, Tom Naughty, the bubble man, put in some. We just went around to small towns around the northwest of the U.S. and into Vancouver and maybe another place or two in B.C., Canada, for those who don't know. We'd go to all these towns where they never had any live entertainment, and we'd put on a show. But since education was always a part of it in the old days, and they would like bring along the latest technology also. Like they probably, I don't know for sure, but I bet some of them were showing off the first electric lights kind of stuff as they traveled.
That's how Star Talk began.
Yeah, back,
and then you were continuing on this tradition.
Yeah, we tried to do our own modern version of it, and we had a couple of yurts we brought along with us, and we had people do workshops in them. Gesundheit people did some workshops on health. There were people doing workshops on like solar energy or other alternative interests, and there were performing workshops. There would be a juggling workshop every year, and there still is. And it became something that we started doing every summer. There have been a few summers since 1981 that we haven't gone on tour, but they've been rare. And we do a number of regional shows also that earn some money to help support the summer tour. There's no payment for doing it. Everybody does it voluntarily.
Right.
And they get some place to pitch their tent, and they get fed and get to go on this adventure with all these like-minded people.
Well, and they get major karma points.
These days, more and more, as it's evolved over the years, it's become very service-oriented. We go into places like retirement homes and juvenile halls and prisons and places where they really can't get out. We bring them entertainment. The letters we receive from those sorts of things are just so incredibly heartwarming. It's just amazing.
And so how long do you go out for? I mean, at its longest, how long did it go out? And nowadays, how long do you go out?
Oh, 4 or 5 weeks was the longest tour ever. Part of what brought this to mind was a lot of us new vaudevillians, to use the correct term, I guess, would get together at the Oregon Country Fair every year outside of Eugene. And so we were all these hippie barbarian performers doing this vaudeville kind of stuff. And the country fair would exist for 3 days, and we'd all get together and get to see each other and hang out and do these shows. And it was just so much fun. We really wished it could last. And so basically we took that on the road and made it possible to continue hanging out with each other.
Yep, we played the Oregon Country Fair right after I joined the RSC in 1990. That was the one summer I think the K's were not able to go because you guys were somewhere else, but you had a phone call or something. We performed at the Oregon Country Fair, and it's just this huge sort of new age fair in Oregon. It's just amazing.
And it's still going on?
Yeah.
Every living hippie on earth may be found at the Oregon Country Fair. Well, no, not quite every, but it is a major gathering, but also it's real people, too. You don't need to be scared. It's this event in the woods. They have booths for all sorts of crafts and foods, and there's a zillion stages with all sorts of acts on them. It's just a heck of a lot of fun.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your favorite juggler and bus driver via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, long-lost Princess Anastasia Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Carter Page. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Stan Lai, artistic director of the Wujin Festival in China. I hope we get to see Stan sometime in the next 3 weeks. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Tischner, 519 1557ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.